Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
And I never would have probably tried Spam if it weren't for my dad.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Look at the meaty thighs on this Italian player.
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I was freaking brothers every way like MJ.
Zardoz.
How dare you, Luis Valbuena is a national treasure.
I'm a pepper jack guy.
Well, I most definitely have a throbbing Corey Kluboner.
So you're delicious and sticky. So I don't know if you guys have this problem or not, but recently I have developed, for no apparent reason, this awful snore. Like the wife literally cannot sleep in the same bed as me because all of a sudden I'm just snoring like a freaking wild boar. And I don't know how to, do you guys have any problems with that? How do I fix my snoring?
I'm not doing it on purpose. I don't snore at all. Now, have you gained any weight lately?
Sort of.
I mean, unless it's a large amount.
I've been getting them gains, bro.
Gains? But I mean, unless it's 10, 12 pounds, that's sometimes that happens. Oh, the other thing you could do is you prop up your bed. You angle it to where, your head's higher than your feet. Sometimes that helps too.
So you need a Craftmatic adjustable.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus. Who sells that? Bob Vila?
I think so. Or somebody like that.
Oh, damn. What's his name? Wilford Brimley.
Or the ShamWow guy?
Wilford Brimley. Does he have a big mustache?
Boys, let me tell you something about diabetes.
Diabetes.
This mustache strains out all the diabetes, so I don't have it. Takes all the cholesterol out of my food. I just sweep it through my mustache. I've been leaking diabetes for 20 years now. Why am I on this horse? No one knows. I'm a centaur now.
Perfect. That's a good way to lead into episode 138 of the Nasty Cast. I would say the Wilford Brimley sode.
The women, yeah. Is it 138? Is that what this one is? That's pretty impressive.
I think so. We've been going at it. This is, I think, year 5 for the Nasty Cast.
Quite a run.
Indeed.
We're getting up there. We're going to be previewing second base with Sammy Reed, and it was a fantastic episode. It talked about, second baseman and a lot about burritos, although that part might have been cut. I think that's back. That was when you were talking to Warren about the skee-ball machine, Ben.
Of course. I'm sad I missed that then.
Warren!
I'm missing the skee-ball talk.
Skee-ball!
Or wait, the burrito talk. You just throw a burrito in a skee-ball machine. I don't think that would work very well.
Skee-ball with burritos.
Okay, I just had a thought. Here's something that Fun City needs to institute is you guys need to replace in the stuffed animal crane, mm-hmm. replace that with wrapped burritos.
Oh, I'd do that in a heartbeat, yeah. Because I would personally lose a lot of money. Now, here's the thing. I have keys to both of our claw machines, so it wouldn't last. I would just walk over, open it up, and eat 4 or 5 burritos, close it, and walk away.
Yeah, that's fair. I would just break the glass to get at the burritos, yeah. For sure.
That'd be popular, though.
Yeah. So if you want to follow us on Twitter and ask us about burritos or, fantasy baseball stuff, you can find us at the show itself is at NastyCastBGFS. I am at Nathan Dokken. Van is at Manly Vanley, and Ron is at The Real Made, M-A-D-A-Y. And if you would please give us a rate and review on iTunes, we will love you forever. It's also the only way to get into the 2018 Podcast League, so there's that. Any new news on the Patreon front, Ben?
I don't have the exact name for the URL, but I will have it soon. And in fact, if I finish that tonight, I will probably just dub that in. So you may or may not hear that soon. But also, don't forget, at Sammy Reed FI. Don't forget his Twitter, so if you want to check out his stuff, there you go.
He is easily the most important out of all of us, by far. And I don't know how I was, obviously on his Twitter account today as he is our guest of honor. And he's got 3,300 or something like that. He's one of the best follows on Twitter. One of my favorite guys that I follow. I don't know how he should have tens of thousands of followers by now.
Nice.
So if you're not following him, go do it right now. You will not be disappointed.
He just followed me back, so I feel very special.
Well, now he's going to go downhill, so that sucks.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry, Sammy. But yeah, so keep an eye out for the Patreon.
There was any street cred he had.
Yeah. all right, so let's get our plugs out of the way before we move on into our special guest segment. Van, did you have some pressing matters you wanted to get out into the...
I do. I don't necessarily know if pressing is the right word because it's going to be a little while, but Fantrax. We also do a podcast over there called the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball Podcast.
We do.
The three of us, you can hear us talk about a little more deep league stuff. But we also write there, you and I do, Nate, we write about whatever it may be. I wrote about stolen bases. You wrote about how to play fantasy baseball. It's all kinds of good stuff. But we also have some big names over.
Also, how to properly construct a burrito.
You've done that twice. I mean, there are two articles that tell you how to do that.
One with beans and one without.
But we have some big names over at Fantrax, Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver. And we are going to be starting a podcast, those two guys and me as producer. It's going to be called the Launch Angle Podcast. Look for that to come up within a couple of weeks. Don't have much more information than that, but I'm working on getting it set up. We'll have a Twitter feed and everything. So if you want to listen to a couple of real fantasy experts and me, then give us a listen.
Very good. Yes, and I am writing about Yoan Moncada this week on my course correction series. Last week I did Javier Baez, and it was a hoot. So go check that out. And also, yeah, Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, we're actually doing our rookie draft episodes this week and next. We're going to do our top 30 draftees. So if you're in Dynasty Leagues, go check that out.
Give it a listen.
Yep. And Ron, did you have anything?
Give a hoot, don't pollute.
Good one. So, you know, we got as you said, we got the rookie draft coming up. I'm looking forward to that. I'm throwing together because I at Big Guy Fantasy Sports, I do the On Deck Circle, the prospect article every week. So I'm throwing together a little preseason article where I'm going to preview a pitcher and a hitter from each division that I think have a little bit of a shot that can make a run at a job in spring training or possibly be a call up pretty soon after that. On my short list, I got to still narrow it down for this division, but Van, I got one of your guys on there, Teoscar Hernandez, looking at him a little bit. So I got to decide between him and I got to narrow it down to two. So he could be the guy, although I don't like the Curtis Granderson move to help his chances. But anyway, another thing I'm looking at starting up, and this is, you know, it's definitely not the level that we are at, but one thing I find is I have a lot of people that I know that are real into fantasy football, but they don't know necessarily how to kind of dive into the fantasy baseball thing. And I get asked a lot of basic questions. And so one of the things I think I'm going to start up here in the next couple of weeks is I'm going to start maybe putting together a few videos and maybe throw those up on YouTube. I might throw them up on, see if Bob will let me throw them up on BGFS, but just starting from scratch, just basics about, you know, fantasy baseball as far as picking leagues, as far as what type of scoring, as far as daily moves, as far as weekly moves, how to construct a draft based on your league format. So it's something that, you know, maybe it exists out there, but it's something, at least in my experience, I know have a lot of people that are wanting to try it out, but once they kind of hear that it's a daily thing that you have all these roster spots to manage, it kind of sounds like a pretty daunting task. So I'm hoping to maybe put those together in a series, and hopefully it can make the process of diving into that from scratch a little bit easier.
Oh, and before I forget, next week we're going to start our positional extra podcast things. Something to do with Patreon, I'm sure, will be involved with that, but we'll start with probably catcher and go from there.
Excellent. Cheers. More details to come.
Indubitably.
All right. Indubitably. So with that, we're going to take a break here and bring on Sammy. What is love? Baby, don't... Nasty. Don't... Nasty. No more. All right. Welcome back to the Nastiest Cast that I know. And we are joined today on this very special episode. You know, last week for our season premiere, we welcomed Tim McLeod, who has been with us pretty much every year since our inception. And now we are moving on to a man who has never graced us with his presence before. You know him from Roto Grinders. He also contributes to Joe Pisapia's number one selling black book and is the co-host, or maybe host. I don't know how they divvy that up. But anyway, he produces the fantastic baseball podcast, Baseball Holics Anonymous. Go subscribe to that. But Don't listen to it now because you'll probably never, you know, finish listening to this one because it's a really sweet pod. And I'm stoked to have with us today Sammy Reed. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. We tried to make this happen at the end of last year, and you know, there's a little snafu, what have you. So I'm excited to be here bringing it in for 2018 and looking forward to getting nasty with you.
Excellent. Yeah, that's so you are the only guest that we have ever lined up that I've ever had to cancel on. And so I still feel terrible about that.
I feel honored, frankly.
Well, you shouldn't, but I still felt bad about that. So I'm really glad that you, you know, agreed to come back this year and grace us with your presence. And you know what, just as a special treat for you, I was listening to the Pop Goes Your World podcast, which you did a guest appearance on, I believe it was just last week, with our buddies Yancey Eaton and Chris McBrien, and learned from that podcast that you're getting married in a scant couple of weeks. Is that correct?
Yeah, like a month from tomorrow. It's all happening, man. So, you know, I'm going to try to switch all my leagues from daily transactions to weekly transactions. And, you know, I think that's a good first step.
The end is nigh. But I tell you what,
that is correct.
I worked up a special treat just because I was so glad that you decided to come back. I have for you a very special segment dedicated just to you. Marriage Advice with Nate. I've got 10 tips for a successful marriage for you. So you might want to grab like a pencil and paper.
Oh, lay it on me, man. I need all the help and advice I can get here.
The other thing you might go ahead and do is just completely ignore the next several sentences Nate is about to say.
Probably the sharp play.
This is good advice. I don't know what you're talking about, man. So, number one, do take your wife out to eat instead of making her dinner at home. Take her out to a nice restaurant. The ladies like to go out. Okay. Number two, don't tell your friend to ambush you as you both walk out of the restaurant and pretend to stab you and steal your wallet just to see what her reaction would be. Number three, do take your wife on a midnight picnic in the park under the stars. Number four, don't tell your friend to jump out from behind a tree and pretend to stab you and take your wallet just to see what her reaction would be. Number five, do order your wife flowers on random days for no reason. Number six, don't send a message with the flowers saying, I'm right behind you, and then stand behind her with a kitchen knife. Number seven, do rub her back in candlelight with expensive massage oils. Number eight, don't tell your friend to break into the room and pretend to stab you and take your wallet just to see what her reaction would be. Number nine, do take her to the beach for a day of relaxation. And finally, number 10, don't tell your friend to drive a boat to your spot on the beach and tell your wife you can't take it anymore and swim to the boat and drive away, never to be seen or heard from again.
That is very good advice. Let me ask you this. If I follow these 10 commandments to a T, will I avoid the marriage no sex curse?
Absolutely. It's got the Dawkins stamp of approval, 100% guaranteed.
I think
you kind of hesitated there. I'm having some.
he had to think about what number to put on that guarantee before he said it.
My biggest takeaway from all this is apparently you go and eat at midnight in a park. Who's hungry at midnight in a park?
Everybody. I mean, I am. I'm hungry in a house. I'm hungry with a mouse. At midnight, that's like my time. So.
I'll eat at any given moment. But I'm also what's the term? A freak, that's what it is. So, yeah, I don't really hold that to most people. But, you know, having your wallet stolen and stabbed, that sounds okay. I can deal with that.
Okay, I have a question is what type of gourmet delicacies does one take on a midnight picnic in the park?
String cheese Chinese, and chalky milk.
Chinese okay. food.
Well, I'm in.
Chinese food.
Chinese food, there you go.
Chinese food. I heard the pod last week, and I was like, I love Chinese food. I should have been on this episode.
I'll get to some Mugu Gapan.
All right, we'll get on to the news here. Talk some actual baseball. We're going to start off with a trade of some note, I suppose. Not that there's anything else going on in baseball, so this stands out as massive news for this current time frame. Gerrit Cole was sent to the Astros in exchange for Colin Moran, Franklin Perez, Joe Musgrove, and Jason Martin. So, Sammy, what was your reaction to this trade, and how, if at all, does this affect Gerrit Cole's value?
I mean, my initial reaction was that the Pirates were trying to do their best Marlins impression by giving away good players for, you know, basically, you know, all basically. So, I mean, sorry, but that's really what it was. As far as it matters for Gerrit Cole's fantasy production, I think it gives it a slight boost, right? PNC has a real kind of reputation for being a good pitcher's park, but it's not amazing, you know, like Derek Carty does his bat projections and it ranks 18th in WOBA, whereas Houston ranks 21st in projected park factors. And Houston is actually a better park for strikeouts. And a lot of people ask, okay, how does a park affect strikeouts? There's a lot of ways, right? The altitude and how pitches break, the foul ground, the batter's eye, et cetera. But basically, Houston's park raises strikeouts more than PNC's does. Obviously, he has a better lineup behind him, more run scoring. So overall, I actually think it's a net positive for him.
Interesting. Van, are you as rosy on the move?
I am and I'm not. I think my biggest fear is that he does go from the National League, and the park factors, kind of like Sammy said, aren't as big of a deal. But this is a guy who was really homer prone last year, so I'm kind of afraid that might happen a little more, which is kind of his downfall. But what I really want to mention at this point is a friend of the podcast, Matt Modica, put a thing on Twitter the other day comparing the careers of Max Scherzer to Gerrit Cole up through this point. And it's eerie how similar they were. And for a long time, I've struggled to say why I'm actually really in on Gerrit Cole, and that's a good reason for it. So I think the wins are going to help out a little bit there, although obviously you can't predict those. He's going to be in a better team. Maybe he ends up giving a couple more home runs, or maybe he just corrects that over the course of it. But either way, it's a good move for him just because he got on a better team, and you know maybe he's got a better chance at winning some postseason games as opposed to the fact that we know the Pirates really weren't going anywhere.
Oh, how dare you? I thought they were the breakup contention. But Gerrit Cole is really lacking in the mismatched eye colors, so I just don't think that comparison is apt. I'm sorry. Ron, what do you think about the move for Cole?
I like it. I think it gives him a bump as far as a few wins. And I think, too, I'm hoping at least, because I'm a Gerrit Cole guy. I've liked him ever since he was in the minors. And I'm hoping that it could be maybe just kind of a change of mindset, you know, kind of as Van alluded to. You know, he's kind of wasting away on the Pirates, who clearly aren't really apt to go anywhere. And all of a sudden, he's on a team that could very well go back-to-back as far as winning World Series again. So I'm hoping that'll affect him a little bit. And to kind of speak to what Sammy said about the garbage return that they got, I was listening to on XM the other day, Jim Bowden was talking about the return, and he was talking about how, and I can't think of the name of the Pirates GM off the top of my head. It escapes me right now. There you go. Neil Huntington. Yeah, there you go. And so I think they kind of got him to admit to the fact that the Yankees were offering a package around Clint Frazier, but the difference, according to him, was they liked the number one player better from the Yankees being Frazier, but also when they looked at what the Astros coughed up, they liked players 2 and 3, and also the Astros threw in a fourth player that the Yankees weren't really only willing to do 3. So needless to say, I still think I would have taken the Clint Frazier deal instead of this, but they seem to like the middling pieces and the extra player, so that's kind of why they went that way, according to him. Now, I don't know how much you can believe of that, but if that were the case, I think I definitely would have went with the Clint Frazier deal. But overall, I like it for Gerrit Cole. I think it could give him a bump in a couple of categories.
Yeah, you know, I personally could care less about Joe Musgrove. I don't think there's a ton there. But apparently, Colin Moran is a guy that they really, really liked. And he had a decent power surge last year. So I don't know what to think too much about Colin Moran. I think he could be a decent player. But the way this trade was set up, it just almost feels like that's got to be one of the guys they really expect to do well. And I don't know if that's going to happen.
And Jeff Sullivan wrote a piece on Colin Moran recently on Fangraphs, so I would point people towards that as well to perhaps give some Pirates fans some optimism. I actually haven't read it myself yet, but you know, if you're trying to look for reasons to not jump off the ledge, then maybe that'll be a positive thing for you. As for Gerrit Cole's value, I'm a little less optimistic. I don't know if it's going to be a huge, you know, boon to his value or anything, just because I really respect what Ray Searidge has done for all the pitchers there. And so leaving him, I don't know that it necessarily does any favors. And there's still the park change. And, you know, even like you were saying, Savvy, maybe that's not such a big deal. But still going to the AL Never really helps. So overall, I'm not too excited, I guess, for the move for Cole. I'm sort of ambivalent. But let's go to another move that the Pirates just made, and that is trading Andrew McCutchen to the Giants for Kyle Crick, Brian Reynolds, and $500,000 in international bonus pool space, which they will use for Shohei Ohtani. Oh, no, sorry. Van, what was your reaction? We'll start with you to this trade, and does this change Andrew McCutchen's value for you at all?
Not really. I mean, he played in a pretty big park. He's going to get to play in a corner spot, so he played a little center field last year, so it'll be nice to keep him a little bit healthier in that regard. He's largely going to be in a worse lineup. I know that's weird to say, but the only reason I say that is because it's the Giants, and they always just seem to have terrible, terrible lineups. I thought the trade was a little short-sighted. I mean, Kyle Crick was a nice starting pitching prospect, but they moved him to the bullpen last year, and he was lights out, and I don't think he's going back to starting, so I think he's definitely a bullpen guy. Brian Reynolds, I didn't know a whole lot about prior to this. He's basically just a 22-year-old outfielder who has a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but it isn't that exciting. But it'll be nice for McCutchen. And I think if the Giants maybe sign a Lorenzo Cain, which it looks like they could do, they could have a pretty darn good outfield. But it's going to be worth watching. And value-wise, I don't know, McCutchen stays the same for me. I've always liked him, and I really kind of predicted a bit of that resurgence he had last year. And I think it could continue in that regard. He's not a superstar anymore, but he's a really good player.
I'd like the return better if it were Burt Reynolds instead of Ryan Reynolds. He had a nice, sweet, sexy mustache.
And a big cowboy hat.
Exactly. What do you think, Ron?
I agree with Burt Reynolds, definitely. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of the same for me. McCutchen, you know, you can't expect the MVP McCutchen that you got a few years ago. But I think you can still expect a guy that could maybe be your third, fourth outfielder later on in the draft, maybe get you 20 homers, maybe get you 80 RBI. He's not going to be swiping bases for you. But, yeah, he is in a little bit lesser of a lineup, so I'm hoping they bring somebody else in. Now, they did add Longoria, as we talked about before, so that could help out a little bit. But beyond those guys, you know, you have a lot of, you know, aging players in that lineup, and health is one thing I look at as maybe kind of a concern. And, McCutchen's had some injuries, you know, last couple of years. Longo's been healthy for the most part. Pence has been hurt quite a bit. So I'm hoping if they stay healthy, you know, that you could maybe see them put some runs on the board more so than they have in the past. But I don't think you're going to see, you know, an explosive offense by any means. And as far as the return, I don't know. I mean, if that's it's hard for me to believe that's the best they could have done for some of these guys. So I don't know. And I almost wonder if they were more excited about the international pool money that they got more than the two players that they got in return. But overall, I think, you know, kind of like Van said, McCutchen's a guy that's just going to – he's not great. He's not terrible. He's just going to be a solid, steady guy for you if you're able to get him later on.
Yeah. So what's your main takeaway from this, Sammy?
If it's Burt Reynolds and Boogie Nights, I'm absolutely in. Absolutely loved him. Absolutely loved him. It's tough to be Andrew McCutchen and go to a worse ballpark than PNC, right? I was looking in my baseball prospectus annual, and they do 3-year ballpark factors, right? And they don't have it for this year yet. It's coming out in like a month. But from 2014 to 2016, Pittsburgh had a 95 run factor for righties. San Francisco has a 92. Pittsburgh had an 85 home run factor. San Francisco had an 84. So these are not big differences, but it is a slight downgrade. And obviously McCutchen's now on the other side of 30. We've seen his production starting to go down a little bit in the last couple of years. So I agree that he's still a nice player, but this move really didn't do him a ton of favors. And I mean, that San Francisco lineup is egregious, just egregious. So I'm not all that pumped on the move for him.
Egregious. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm going to bump Kutch down a few ticks in my overall rankings. So we'll move on to our last bit of news. The Twins signed Addison Reed. And so Ron, with Fernando Rodney also in tow, who closes for the Minnesota Twinkies?
Well, from what I've heard and what I've read, one of the things that they told Rodney when they signed him was that he was going to get the job. So that's what I'm hearing and seeing now. that could be the case for about 2 weeks and he could implode and have a 5 ERA like or 4 ERA or whatever it is he's prone to having. That it might actually be a little bit on the friendly side as far as how he's been the last few years. But Addison Reed's kind of a weird signing. But, I mean, either one of them can close and maybe it becomes a situational thing. But I don't know necessarily that I'm too big on either one. I think if all things are equal and they both have an equal shot at the job, I think I'm more apt to be an Addison Reed guy as opposed to the performances that Fernando Rodney has put up the past few years. It's tough to get a closer that can get you 25 saves and can also get you a 5 ERA and a 1.5 whips like Fernando Rodney is famous for doing. So all things equal, I'm taking Addison Reed over Fernando Rodney. But like I said, Rodney has been told he's got the job, so he's the guy at least from the get-go that's going to be getting the chances.
Okay. Sammy's, are you also drafting Reed before Rodney?
No, I'm probably drafting Rodney, and I fully agree that I think Rodney starts with the job. He's just that guy. Like, every year you're like, dude, Fernando Rodney sucks. He's going to get lit up. The guy behind him is going to get the job. And every year he, like, gets lit up for a little bit and then figures it out and then gets lit up and figures it out. And he almost never ends up losing the job. I think he's top five in saves over the last 10 years. So, you know, in this situation, I completely agree that Addison Reed is by far the better pitcher. But if I'm just in a straight saves league, I'm going to go with the guy who has the job now.
Okay. And what is your opinion, Ben?
A similar deal, but I think more importantly, the weird thing for me is that I feel like Reed signed for less than I think he could have gotten. I mean, he's proven that he's turned into a pretty good relief pitcher. He started out really well, fell off for maybe 1 or 2 years, and then the last couple of years has been really good. And I was, in fact, well, for those who don't know, I live in Springfield, Missouri, so I'm surrounded by Cardinals fans. There are no such thing as Royals fans. But anyway, the Cardinals fans were going nuts and talking about how Luke Gregerson was announced as the closer. And all I could think was, for as cheap as Addison Reed was, why don't they just sign Addison Reed, a guy like that, and have him close? I think that would be a better deal. So I don't get the fact that he signed for so little. But because he signed for so little, I do think you're right. Rodney probably keeps the job for a while, unless, you know, barring a complete implosion. But either way.
Well, and I was going to say, it's weird, right? The Rockies, like, signed all these guys like Shaw and McGee for like 3 years, $27 million. And Addison Reed's better than those guys. And yeah. I know they have to pay a little bit of a tax because they're the Rockies and pitchers don't want to go there. But I was also surprised that Reed got so little.
It's kind of shocking. And I'm curious to see how the rest of the reliever market shakes out. There's not a whole lot left. In fact, off the top of my brain, I can't think of anybody. But it negatively impacts the market in that regard. So we'll see how the rest of the offseason plays out.
Yeah, as a Twins fan, I was ecstatic when I saw this Addison Reed signing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great. Seems like great value. And even if he's sort of going to be the fireman, I think. So at least to the start of the season, yeah, I definitely think that Rodney's going to be the guy. And God, does he drive me nuts because, you know, we've all talked about how bad he can be. And I'm always the guy who handcuffs whoever is behind Rodney, and yet somehow he never relinquishes the damn job. And so I'm just holding on to this guy for a whole season and never getting any saves out of him. But I think Addison Reed, especially if he manages to somehow, you know, usurp Rodney, he is going to be 41 this year. And so, you know, the odds are as good now as ever that the wheels are just going to fall off. And so that'll make Addison Reed even more valuable. And you look at his usage over the last couple of years too, 77 and two thirds and 76 innings pitched. And Paul Molitor, when he gets a guy, he just uses the crap out of that player. So I definitely think that you can see a lot of innings from Addison Reed again in that Twins bullpen, and with a fair bit of strikeouts, and he doesn't walk guys either, so he's helping your whip at the same time. So he's probably going to be, if not my number one handcuff for closers, he's going to be right up there. So he will definitely have some kind of value for this season. But with that, that's going to end our news. We're going to move on to the mailbag. And we've got two items that we're going to talk about. First one is from our buddy Barry at Barry Baker 8664. Sammy, he asks us if Yoan Moncada will be a top five second baseman this year. You think that notion is optimistic or realistic?
I mean, I love Moncada's talent long term, but top five is definitely optimism along the lines of like me hoping my girlfriend brings home Mila Kunis for a threesome, right? Like, I mean, the guy had a 32% strikeout rate last year. And one of the other red flags about him is that he only attempted 5 steals in 54 games. Now, he stole a lot in the minors, so I can definitely see that rate going up. But when you take that with the strikeout rate, I don't think he's ready to hit for average with a guy like Daniel Murphy. Not quite ready to hit for power along the lines of Robinson Cano. So someday top 5 second baseman, yes. This year, probably not.
Ben, what do you say?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say it's optimistic, but it's also semi-realistic. I don't know if his power plays up right away. And in the majors, I'm not sure he hits for a great average for a while. But if he goes 240, 330, 420 with 15 homers and 30 stolen bases, I mean, that's going to be a ton of value. Maybe it's not top 5, but it's going to be close. So there's a chance it could happen, but I'm certainly not going to bank on it.
Indeed. What say you, Ron?
Well, what it prompted me to do is I wanted to look and see, you know, for him to be a top 5 second baseman, what were the type of numbers he's going to have to produce in order to rank that at the end of the year? And so what I did was I took our dynasty, our prestigious dynasty league, and I looked at how we finished, you know, second base last year. It's OBP league. So when you take out that ridiculous nonsense of Anthony Rizzo being a second baseman and you look at everybody else, the numbers that finished at number 5 were Jonathan Scope. And so Jonathan Scope, you know, finishes with 92 runs, 32 homers, 105 RBIs, only 1 steal, 338 OBP. So is he going to be able to produce those type of numbers? I'm not real now, kind of like, you know, Sammy said, kind of like Van said, I think long-term that's something maybe he can get to. I don't think it's this year. I don't think there's any way he scores 92 times in that White Sox lineup. And so I don't know necessarily if it's going to be top 5. I'm more of kind of, because he's ranked, you know, his ADP has him as a 10th second baseman off the board. So what I wanted to do is kind of look at what maybe if he could finish in the top 10, right around the 10 range, what is he going to have to put up? So once again, throwing Rizzo's numbers out, you got Scooter Gennett with 80 runs, 27 homers, 97 RBI, 3 steals, 342 OBP. I think that's a little more where I'm expecting him to be. Now, not saying I expect Scooter Gennett to repeat that. He could, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. We'll talk about that later. But those are, to me, more realistic numbers to look from Moncada this season. Maybe add some steals onto that, because I think he's apt to get quite a few more than 3 steals. But I think he's more Scooter Gennett-type numbers than he's going to be the Jonathan Scope numbers that got the number 5 ranking last year.
Yeah, so part of the optimism is that second base just kind of sucks, right? Like, you look at the top 5 in the Fantrax ADP, you've got Altuve at 1, D. Gordon at 2, Brian Dozier at 3, Daniel Murphy 4, and like you said, Jonathan Scope at 5, and then just outside that, Will Merrifield, Robinson Cano. So, yeah, some decent talent, but not necessarily insurmountable. And Sammy, that was one of the first things you said, is that he only attempted 5 stolen bases in, you know, whatever it is, like a quarter of the season last year at the major league level. Not encouraging by any means, but I just think he's got such you know, such great speed that I think that he can, you know, if I draft him, I can consider 15 steals as like a floor just based on his speed and, you know, over the course of a full season. Hopefully he doesn't get picked off 50% of the time. But I'm actually writing up Yoan Moncada for Fantrax this week. And so I was looking into stolen bases from last year, and there's only 17 players in all of baseball last year that stole more than 20 bases, which I think is still a pretty likely outcome for Yoan Moncada. So that alone makes him, you know, somewhat valuable. I'm definitely worried about the strikeout rate, but it's, you know, hopefully it's something that he can improve on. He's still very young, and he's got enough power to sort of balance out the what I will assume to be a terrible batting average, at least to a certain extent. So I don't think it's actually super duper like a Mila Kunis threesome far-fetched, but it is definitely.
Well, I actually put that as like hopefully kind of likely. So, you know, I'm a optimist in general.
I see. Well, that's a different tale then. All right. So our other entry in the mailbag here.
Shameless plug real quick. If you want to see some interesting stolen base stats, you should also check out one of my more recent articles on fantrax.com.
Yes.
That's all I got. We can move on.
Oh, I thought you were going to like... I thought you were going to dramatically drop the title of it.
I would if I remembered, but that was more than 48 hours.
I believe it's the
hours.
Stolen Base Conundrum.
It is indeed the Stolen Base Conundrum.
Yes. I'm a big Van fan. I'm a Van fan.
Instead of that blistering silence, we can just like clip in some really cool way to say the Stolen Base Conundrum.
The Stolen Base. It's the freaking Stolen Base Conundrum.
All right, Van. So here's a conundrum for you from at @r_lewis7 on Twitter. Do we continue to trust Brian Dozier?
Hey, why shouldn't we? Is my main question. I mean, I see absolutely zero reason not to. He's younger than I thought. He's 30. I think he'll be 31 some point in the middle of the season. And he's just a great player. Batting average is his main knock. And I think if it slips, obviously you're going to see some other statistics slip. But he, well, let's say it does. He'll may end up with like a 240, 330, 450 line with 20 homers and 10 stolen bases. And again, second base, that's still really good. I don't expect to fall that far. And to be honest, what I would predict would be more like 260, 350, 490 with another 30 homer, 15 steal season. So I definitely trust him. And until I see like concrete signs that he's starting to fall off, I'm all in on the Bulldozer.
All right. Do you agree, Ron?
I agree 100%. You know, there could be a little dip in the numbers, like Van said, but when you're getting 30 homers and 15 steals at this second base spot, because that's once again one of the things that I notice, it drops off the cliff very quickly. You know, the 359 OBP is nice. The average might, like I said, might dip a little bit. He's fairly durable as well. But I look at it also, too. I look for maybe the youngsters in the Twins lineup to take a little bit of a step, and they can maybe, you know, provide a little bit more around him to where he might get a little bit more love as far as pitches to hit. And, you know, the other thing, too, is if they can get both of the Kennys to hit a little bit better, that could help him out as well. So
I don't know if I'd bank on that. Sammy, are you doing trust falls with Brian Dozier?
Man, I've been tracing Kenneth Vargas for years, so that kind of hit really close to home. I gotta agree with you guys, man. I'm gonna keep trusting Dozier until he gives us a reason not to, right? Fun fact about him: he's the only player in Major League Baseball to have scored 100 or more runs each of the last 4 years. And you know, he's on the other side of 30 now, but the last 2 years were the two best hard hit rates of his career. Been a model of good health. And I mean, for a guy with such tremendous pull power, he's actually maintained a strikeout rate below league average his entire career. And last year, he even made gains in plate discipline. His career O swing, you know, the percentage of time he goes outside of the zone for his career was 28%. Last year, he bumped it down to 23.4%. So I really like it when a player continues to evolve and get better and better, you know, even as he ages a little bit. So for me, I'm a big fan of Dozier, and I absolutely trust him.
Absolutely. And I can't say anything bad about Brian Dozier with his bobblehead staring at me. So
he's chasing away ghosts.
Very, very handsome, has great hair. That really counts in fantasy baseball to me.
Yeah, so, he's got just a warm Southern sort of way of speaking.
So I guess they need to do another one of those Pert Plus commercials or whatever, except instead of C.J. Wilson and Joe Mauer, they have Brian Dozier.
Yeah, they could just bring Mauer back, Mauer and Dozier.
See, it's bingo, perfect. Bango. They could be like nude and washing each other's hair. And I mean, somebody would be into that somewhere.
You've just described, you know, the number one Nate Dawkins fantasy.
That's true.
You know.
Oh, no. All of my fantasies include Byron Buxton, baby. Anyway, let's move on to ADP Wars.
War has changed. It's no longer about nations, ideologies, or ethnicity.
Instead, it's more about laser show out in Baxton, Pedroia.
I wrote down Mazzara here, and I disagree with myself.
I'm gonna give a slight edge to Eric Hosmer.
Well, you can't make us sound any dumber than we already do. All right, and of course, what we are doing here is we have two similarly grouped players in Fantrax ADP, average draft position, and so basically at this point in the draft, where are you going, either player A or player B? And so, Sammy, we'll start with you here. Daniel Murphy, whose ADP is 57 versus Jonathan Scope, whose ADP is right behind him at 59. Who are you drafting?
I am giving the nod to good old Daniel Murphy. Because for me, over the last three seasons, Murphy's hit 317. That's the fourth highest mark in the majors. And he has the second highest WRC plus among second basemen behind only Jose Altuve. So I know he's older than Scope. Scope's going into his theoretical prime. Murphy's kind of coming off the downslope. But for me, I like Scope because he's young and he has pop. But I don't really see him carrying a 290 average like he has, last season. I mean, he's got really poor plate discipline. He's kind of made some gains in there over the years, which is impressive, but it's still not great. So for me, it's really his home runs versus Murphy's well-rounded skill set. And for me, I mean, you guys have done drafts. Once you get to like round 8-9, like batting average is so scarce. So I'm going to take Daniel Murphy because of that batting average. It's a scarcer asset. I think you can make up the power that Scope provides later.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm going to go Murphy all the way. I know he's a little older and carries a bit of an injury risk bug after last offseason and so forth, but I will take my chances on a guy who's just a plain better hitter. I loathe guys who can't walk at all, and Scope fits that to a T. I think he walked like 4% last year. It's something horrible. So that means basically he has to bat 275 plus just to have an OBP over 300. And if he has any sort of prolonged slump, you're going to wind up with like a 250, 285 player who doesn't score any runs because he's never on base. So this is definitely an easy one for me. I'll take Daniel Murphy all the way.
Yeah, and Sammy kind of made my argument to a T, some of the things that I noticed as well. But when you look at the numbers stacked up against each other, and you look at what these guys have done over the last three, four years, Murphy's been as consistent as they come, and he's performed at a high level at the position. Scope, I think he's more the 2016, 2015 Scope than he is the 2017 Scope. It's going to be hard for me to believe that he can put up the 293 again. He could get to 30 homers again. He could get to 100 RBIs again. But when you stack their numbers up against each other, you're losing about, based on 2017, you're losing about 9 homers if you go Daniel Murphy, but you're gaining about 25 points of batting average. You're gaining about, around 50, 55 points OBP. You're getting about the same amount of runs. You're getting a few less RBI, but I mean, for what you give up as far as RBI and homers, kind of like Sammy alluded to, once again, you can find pop later on. You're not going to find a 322 average. You're not going to find a guy that's going to give you that. So I'm Daniel Murphy all the way as well.
It's going to be a clean sweep. I can see Scope hitting 30 bombs again this year, but definitely regression everywhere else in the runs and RBI. I think that could actually tip into Murphy's favor anyway. And yeah, batting average for Scope, I see it just going way down. He's consistently one of the league leaders in pop-up rate, which is not a category you want to lead. I think there's a pretty precipitous drop off closer to the 264 career mark that Scope usually has. And we're going to talk about another batting average player right now, actually. And that is where I'm going with Daniel Murphy. It's really underrated, very important to consider throughout your draft. And so we're going to actually move on to that next matchup here, which is Ian Happ with an ADP of 125 versus DJ LeMahieu, the guy who I was alluding to. His ADP is also at 125. So, Sammy, who are you going with here, Ian Happ or DJ LeMahieu?
Well, I got to say, first off, I love going first because then I can make my points and I can steal other people's points and you guys can't steal mine. So I really appreciate you guys doing that for me. I was just talking about batting average and DJ LeMahieu is a fantastic hitter, lifetime 302 hitter, obviously Coors aided, but he's in Coors. So that's what it is. The issue for me is that he has an express lack of category juice, like 19 homers and 17 steals combined over the last two seasons. Meanwhile, last year, Happ, 24 homers and 8 steals in only 115 games. And, it's kind of a fool's game to extrapolate that and be like, oh, yeah, he's going to hit 30 homers and steal 12 bases. But he stole 22 hit 22 homers and stole 19 bases per 150 games in the minors. So I like the guy that's going to provide all that category juice as opposed to DJ LeMahieu, who's a little more of an empty batting average guy. In this case, I'm going to go with Ian Happ.
Yeah, and this one should be simple enough with Ian Happ hacking to the tune of 33 homers and 10 stolen bases between the two levels last year. compared to DJ's 8 and 6 respectively. By the way, he does not want to take any more bar mitzvah inquiries, so you should probably just go ahead and stop that.
I was going to bring that up too. You beat me to it.
But if we do dig a little deeper, and I just kind of throw this out there, there are a few disturbing trends to be found in Hap's profile. First off, he did strike out 31.2% of the time, and that 316 BABIP was in line with his career, but that also means the average is likely to get better than the 250-260 range. The power surge was pretty interesting, considering his highest total in a season before was 15 in 2016, and he had 40 more plate appearances. This last year's home run to fly ball rate was massive in both leagues, and it at the very least doubled his career rate. He had 31% in the minors and 25.3% in the majors, so I highly doubt it holds up, and I think he's more of a 15 home run guy than, say, a 33 homer guy like he had last year. DJ does what he does. He walks, he hits over 300, and he provides a little bit of everything, but it's just not enough of everything. So I am going to take Hap because I would much rather take the potential for greatness than the solid just okayness that you're going to get with LeMahieu. Now, that said, look at your team. If at this point in your draft you've got a ton of question marks, maybe LeMahieu makes a little more sense. But overall, I'm going to stick with Hap.
Yeah, I agree with that last point, Van. I think it depends upon where your roster is at that point. But I think, you know, one of the things that you try to do in your draft is as you get down through the rounds, you know, you want to start out and you want to get guys that are going to contribute across the board. And as we know, and as all of our listeners know, once you get on down further down the line, you find less and less of those guys that can contribute in multiple categories. So I think when you get to that point, you know, obviously I'm going to side with Hap as well, just for the potential for the 30 homers. I think the RBIs go up. You know, he stole eight bags last year in a limited amount of games. I think that could go up to maybe, you know, possibly 10 to 15. Who knows? The K rate's got to come down a little bit, like was alluded to earlier. But when I look at DJ LeMahieu, when I first saw that stat line, because I didn't own DJ LeMahieu anywhere, and he obviously gets a tiny bump, maybe because he's in Coors Field, but still he's not a power guy. He could benefit from the other power guys as far as the runs category. But I thought maybe with the 8 homers, the 64 RBIs, 6 steals, I'm like, oh, that's not much. Maybe he was hurt part of the year. That was in 155 games. And so that kind of tells you right there, he's kind of a one-trick pony as far as the batting average and the OBP, which is really nice. But I would rather have the multiple category counting stat type stuff. And I think I'm going to go with Hap here. But once again, you know, like Van said, when you get to that point of draft, depending upon what you might need, LeMahieu could be the guy, but I'll still take the power and the steals with Hap being probably, you know what, this will be his first full year up there, so we'll see where he hits in the lineup, but I think he's the guy.
Yeah, it's going to depend a little bit on, like, if I did take a Daniel Murphy, you know, at his ADP, I'm probably not going to go LeMahieu. I'll probably lean towards Ian Happ. So that kind of, you know, lends itself into what you guys were just saying. But in most scenarios, I think I would probably lean LeMahieu here for the safety. And, you know, over a 300 batting average each of the last 3 years, excellent contact rates. He plays in Coors. No reason to think that he's not going to be probably well over 300. And, you know, only 25 players hit over 300 in all of 2017. And so that batting average with the consistency of 145 to 155 games every year, that helps your overall batting average in a huge way. And that's really hard to make up with other players. You know, it's easier to find that category juice, as you said, Sammy. It's, of course, with DJ LeMahieu, that's like trying to juice a, I don't know, banana. You can't juice.
Banana juice. Isn't that a Raffy song?
Is it?
No, Banana Phone. Does anyone here know who Raffy is? Please, because I don't have kids. One of you guys.
Absolutely do. Not.
Okay, so
I was thinking from the league, but
no, Raffy is like a kids singer, and like his hit song Banana Phone is, I know every word to Banana Phone for no reason. And again, I don't have kids, so I shouldn't. But it basically just goes, ring, 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 Banana Phone. Boop, boop, ba-doop, ba-doop. And it's horrible. It's the most vile thing you've ever heard. So,
oh, my! If I have this stuck in my head for the rest of the night, I'm never coming on this pod again.
I'm very glad that I didn't have to ask you to do that, that you did that willingly without being prompted. That's awesome.
There's no asking me. I'll do whatever. I have no shame. I've told two stories song. About Newt Gunray over the last couple of weeks. Of course I'll sing Banana Phone.
I think this is the song that never ends to get Banana Phone out of our heads. But yeah, no, just with Ian Happ, one more point on him, just how frightened I am of the batting average. Just the complete inverse of LeMahieu. 67% contact for Ian Happ last year and a 16% swinging strike rate is ludicrously bad. It's too damn high, as Jimmy McMillan might say.
There it is.
So, I mean, he might hit 230 this year, and it just scares the crap out of me. You can get power elsewhere, so I'm in almost every circumstance, I'm going to just take the safer bet in DJ LeMahieu, who will also book your bar mitzvah, as Van said. All right, and our last battle here in ADP Wars, we have Starlin Castro at 251 versus Jason Kipnis at 253. Sammy, which way are you leaning here?
Man, I mean, this is tough because I hate both of these guys equally. They're just both bad. I think I'm going to side with Kipnis here because Starlin Castro is A, fat, B, doesn't steal anymore, and C, is now on the Marlins. So Kipnis is definitely past his prime, but he's on a good team, and he still runs a little bit. He can still contribute that 8 to 12 steals in a full season, and I don't think his power is that much worse than Castro's, and his team and his ballpark are better. So out of the two terrible options, I'm going to go with Jason Kipnis.
Yeah, and, you know, it was fairly well known that Kipnis had some injuries last year. He was hampered a bit. And if there's anyone out there who's ever listened to me on the Backup Catcher podcast, which means all both of you, then you'll know that I said that when Jason Kipnis fails and starts to fall, he's going to fall hard. And I think this is probably the beginning of that. But I still think he's got a little bit left in the tank. He slashed 232, 291, 414 with 12 homers and 6 stolen bases in 373 plate appearances. Castro, on the other hand, had a mostly full healthy season and hit 300, 338, 454. Though one thing I want to point out is that Castro's a lot younger than I thought he was. He's 27 compared to Kipnis's 30. Castro had 16 homers, 2 stolen bases. Like Sammy said, he doesn't run because he's kind of chunky. I think Kipnis performing better than he did last year is better and more likely than Castro just kind of doing what he does. So I'm going to stick with Kipnis and see if maybe he has a 500 another 500 plate appearance season. And if he has a really big comeback, he could hit 20 homers, steal 15 bases, and give you pretty solid numbers across the board. I don't think it happens, but this late in the draft, I'm going to take his upside over Castro.
Okay, quick. Sammy, call heads or tails?
Tails.
Okay, so I'm going to go, I guess, I'm going to go Starlin Castro based on my coin flip here. I'm with Sammy. I hate both of these guys. I don't want anything to do with either one, but I guess since Castro is the one that came up, I'll make an argument for him. The durability seems to be a little bit better the last couple seasons. He is on the Marlins, so, you know, once again, he could have maybe like 12 RBIs if he's lucky. He doesn't steal, but the 20 homer season was something positive in 2016. He had 16 last year, was hurt a little bit. I don't know if Kipnis is going to be back to his old self, or the drop off was pretty massive last year. And I know a little bit of that was due to some injuries, but overall, I don't like either one. I think of the list here, this was probably the toughest one for me to come up with one. But I guess based on the way the coin fell, I have to go with Starlin Castro.
Yeah, you could not have put a sound effect in there that worked better than that coin flip. I'm going to go with Kipnis here. Castro, really, what are you getting? Like, you're hoping for 20 home runs. You can get that just about anywhere. Not going to get a ton of runs or RBI. There's no reason he should have hit 300 last year. I definitely see that batting average dropping closer down to you know, his career mark, maybe 270, 280, somewhere in there. And so I'm going to go with the upside in Jason Kipnis. Maybe he's healthy this year. Maybe he actually strings together 150 games, which is unlikely. But, you know, there's at least upside there. He's going to steal you more bases than Castro. He's got, you know, maybe it'd be a wash in batting average. Who knows? It seems like every year he goes 240 in 2014, then 303 in 2015, back down to 275 in 2016, and last year is 232. So who the hell knows what he's going to hit? But I think that there's at least some power speed upside there. And if he stays healthy, then he could actually turn you quite a profit. So I'm handily going to go with Jason Kipnis on this one. And so with that, we're going to take our break and then come back, look at bargains, busts, and sleepers. She's up all night till the sun. I'm up all night to get some. She's up all night for good fun. I'm up all night to get nasty. All right, we are back, and we're going to dive into some bargains. So, Sammy, we'll start with you here. Who do you think is going a little bit late this year at the second base position?
So, for me, the guy I chose was Jonathan VR. And for me, I've never been a huge VR fan, but I love where I'm getting claps here. This is good.
Yeah.
This is giving me some. Yeah. Now I didn't want to say anything stupid. So that's a really big confidence booster. I mean, obviously VR has got a lot of downside in that A, he could suck again, or B, lose his job again like an idiot. But his ADP right now is between 180 and 200. And that's the point in the draft when I really want to take risks, not in rounds 3, 4, and 5. And we've seen the upside, right? He was like the number one overall fantasy player 2 years ago. And even last year when he was bad, he was pacing for 15 homers and 32 steals in a 600 plate appearance season. So basically what you're doing is hoping that he holds on to a job against, you know, Sogard and, you know, Hernan Perez. All he's got to do is hold on to the job to return value. So I'm really digging the buying opportunity that late in the draft.
I'm going to butt in right here because I remember you guys talking about him either last year or the year before on Baseballholics Anonymous. And I almost broke my neck, like nodding up and down because I liked him so much too. And you were talking about the plate discipline gains yeah. that he has made over the past. And then last year, completely out of the blue, he just lost his approach. All of a sudden, he was chasing out of the zone, and his contact withered away, and it just didn't work. And so it just doesn't make sense to me. So I definitely am in on the bounce back. So go ahead and rebuttal, Van, you hater.
Yeah, I am a hater. I was the only one last year like, hey, we have an entire career of this guy being a hot piece of garbage. But he had one little good peak, so everyone's like, second round. And then he was terrible. However.
Yeah, second round was bad. That was bad.
Guess who's was on my list? Jonathan VR. At pick 188, I've got him here. Speed's hard to find. This low in the draft, I'm okay with it. But I'll go ahead and give you a second name since Sammy already went with that one. And that is Nate and my boy, Cesar Hernandez. Don't forget
Ron. Ron's on that train, too.
Oh, yeah. We're all aboard the Hernandez train.
Sir. Yes, sir.
He's at pick 19. All he did last year was hit 9 homers and steal 15 bases while slashing .294, .373, .421. It's pretty good. I like him that late, and he's definitely a guy I'll probably have on a few teams at least as a bench player.
Okay, I got a couple here, and I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to give a couple names. I think a guy that could return some serious value for where he's at, now he's not ultra low, is Nate, your boy, Ozzie Albies. I think he's a guy that looked solid last year, 244 plate appearances, hit 6 bombs, stole 8 bases. The walk rate was solid. The K rate was down. So I look for big things out of him. He is still pretty young, so be prepared for some hiccups there. Another guy that I think even if he doesn't produce like he did last year, I think he's still somewhere around those numbers. A guy that I alluded to a little bit earlier, number 17 there on the second base list, around pick 212, Scooter Gennett. Is a guy that if you can get him that late, if you can plug him in, you know, as far as whatever your roster is going to be, I think he's a guy that, you know, like I said, I think it's going to be a little bit difficult for him to get back to the 27 homers. But I do like, once again, the fact that the K rate's around 20, so it's not terrible, not great. The .295 average, it might dip a little bit, but still, if he can get anywhere between, you know, 20, 22, 23 homers, hit .260, .270. For later on in the draft, I think that that's kind of the realistic expectation. And if he can duplicate what he did last year, to me, that's a bonus.
My friends, I had 3 names written down here, and they were Ozzie Albies, Jonathan VR, and Cesar Hernandez.
Sharp.
You're welcome.
So
you're sharp.
We are in sound agreement. So let's move on and hate on some guys and look at some busts. So Sammy, why don't you go ahead and lead us off with some second basemen that you hate.
Yeah, this is awesome because my favorite part of any podcast is actually shading baseball players instead of building them up, you know, just that hate. And the guy I want to throw some shade on here is Chris Taylor. Taylor, I mean, monster year last year, right? He hit 23 homers in 432 career minor league games, and 3 of those seasons were in the PCL, which is a noted hitters league. So last year, obviously great, but he had a 361 BABIP and a 15.8% home run to fly ball, even though he ranked 222nd in average exit velocity, 86.8 miles an hour. that's tied with Dansby Swanson and Edney Echevarria. So for me, I mean, obviously that season was great, but I'm not paying for a repeat, especially when the Dodgers are a team that really, you know, they platoon and they filter a lot of guys in and out of the lineup. I don't think you can project him for 600 plate appearances either.
Yeah, and it's funny, I had him on my list as well. Are we really ready to invest in this guy after years of no power and just plain mediocrity? I'm not, so I agree with that. The other name I'll throw out there is Jonathan Scope at 5. It's too early. If one thing goes wrong, everything suffers, and all you're going to get is at least a decent amount of power, but he'll kill you in batting average, he'll kill you in runs, et cetera, et cetera. So I really don't like Jonathan Scope at 5.
My guy is going to be – I smell an odor. Is there an odor in the air?
Stank.
Rougned Odor is my guy, you know, and you look at the drop-off in the average last year. Now, you know you're going to get pop. You know you're going to get a couple categories there. But overall, I don't think at 9, I don't think that I'm going to take him at all. And if he does rebound a little bit, you know, it's tough for me to kind of see if he's the 2015-2016 version or the 2017 version, the 204 average, the OBP. I don't know if I've seen too many guys with a 204 average and 252 OBP in these guys that we've looked at. Now, I will say the 15 steals is nice. Not going to discount that at all. But I think for what you get, if you, as far as those numbers, guys like the aforementioned Scooter Gennett, I feel like I'm having like a Scooter Gennett love fest here. As well, I like Ian Kinsler. I like the move to Anaheim. So I think at that point, you can get similar production. You're not going to get the pop. I think Kinsler might be apt to run a little bit more in that lineup. So I like him there, even though he is getting a little bit older. But I think there's guys that are comparable numbers-wise. Obviously, you're not going to get 30 homers out of them, but I think you can get similar production in those categories, and I think you can get more categories out of some guys that you're going to pay a little bit less for.
Here's the other thing about Odor is that, you know, the last 2 years he's gone like 30-15 and 33-14, but he's been caught on 41% of his career stolen base attempts. Like, they are going to give him the red light at some point, so I don't even feel that confident he's going to keep stealing.
They should have given him the red light years ago. I've been making that point for years now, literally years. Like, why are they letting this guy run? He's detrimental on the base paths. I have not much else to say because my second base bust, Jonathan Scope and Chris Taylor. So,
boom.
Going last sucks, but I totally agree with what you guys have said. So our last segment then, we're going to move on to some second base deep sleepers.
Deep sleepers.
Deep, is that what the drop is going to be? Just you saying deep sleepers?
Deep sleepers.
That's it.
Sexy. So this is with based off of the Fantrax ADP like we've used throughout this podcast. And this is second baseman. They're outside of the top 30. So we're going pretty deep here. Sammy, who's your deep sleeper?
All right. The guy I'm throwing in the hat is Adam Frazier. I think that Frazier is likely to get full-time at-bats with McCutchen gone. Meadows does not look ready at all. And even if he doesn't fill that spot fully, I think Josh Harrison is likely to get moved. And I think that pushes Frazier into the lineup. Obviously, as late as he's going, he's not like super money or anything, but he's 26 and he's hit .283 in his big league career. And he hit .300 in the minors. And he runs a little bit. In most leagues, he has second base and outfield eligibility. I could see him having like a nice little 10 homer, 15 steal type of season with a solid average. And when you're, you know, getting that kind of guy after the 30th round of a 15 teamer, I think that's the kind of glue guy that provides value late in a draft.
He's also probably going to lead the league in tossed salad and scrambled eggs. But he has some competition with another third baseman, too.
That was such a solid old man joke. I hope the people that are listening actually got that.
Somebody out there did, and somebody out there shook their head slowly.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, this is par for the course. Great. There's Van with his old man Frazier jokes. Oh, can I do my quick impression of the entire series of Frazier? You guys ready for it?
Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, Frazier. Or wait, no, hold on. Oh, I'm quite pompous. Look at me, I'm Frazier. Oh, but Frazier, I'm quite more pompous than you. There you go. 10, 12 years of Frazier summed up right there. That's it.
That was beautiful. Oh, beautiful rendition.
All right. So
very, very strong Niles impression.
Niles. Okay. So for my second base deep sleepers, I'm going to do a guy that's not really that exciting, but I think there's some potential here. And that is Colton Wong of the St. Louis Cardinals. He's going about 33rd. He showed a solid late season push where he had good slash numbers. He finished 285, 376, 412. Didn't do a whole lot as far as the counting stats, but with a solid amount of growth, he could be, fingers crossed, maybe even a 15 to 20 guy. I don't know if that happens, but there's always a chance because he also was a fairly decent prospect as well. I think he could benefit from a change of scenery too, but I think the Cardinals will play him, so there's a little bit of chance here. So I kind of like Colton Wong. Obviously, we're getting to the deep guys, so I'm not going to expect him to hit 40 home runs and steal 50 bases, but if he does a little bit and hits for a good average and gets on base, I'll be happy.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with a guy that is not flashy by any means, but he's a guy that I found myself plucking off the waiver wire the last few seasons and had some decent numbers last year, you know, when we're looking at, you know, these deeper sleeper guys. And so I'm going to throw out Jed Lowrie just because, you know, the 14 homers, the 69 RBIs, 11% walk rate, only striking out at a 15% clip, 360 OBP. And his main thing is he just needs to stay healthy, which he's never able to do. So if you can get a good stretch out of Jed Lowrie and you need somebody to pluck off waivers or very, very late in the draft, I think he's a guy that you can go with. The other two that I'm throwing out are mainly just speculation. If you got room, stash them, upside guys that could challenge for a job in spring training or very close after. And that's Padres youngster prospect Luis Urias and Raul Mondesi in Kansas City as well. Depending upon what happens there, what happens with Whit Merrifield, that guy's pretty good. He was pretty good last year. So if he's manning the second base job, Mondesi's got a ways to go. But if for some reason Merrifield gets traded or someone else gets traded and he gets put in the outfield, Raul Mondesi's a guy that you could possibly stash and maybe get something from later on.
All right. Well, I thought I could almost go a segment without somebody stealing my name, but I also put Luis Urias. But also, I think the sort of an accident, I guess, I don't know, that people do sometimes is overlook the, you know, the incumbent player and look forward to the exciting, you know, the minor league player that might be coming up. I don't think that Jose Perella is worthy of being overlooked, and his ADP is only 31, so he's right outside the top 30. But, you know, he posted a 202 ISO over 83 games last year, and that was on a 34% hard contact. And so there's some solid, you know, some solid foundation there. I mean, if you look at his steamer projections on Fangraphs, 16 homers, 10 steals, 263 average, 61 runs, 60 RBIs. If you consider that and compare it against Starlin Castro, which is, you know, he's going how many picks earlier? Why not just wait for Jose Perella if you're in a deep league? Obviously, maybe his job security isn't, you know, quite that nice, but still, I think he's a pretty good bargain going where he is. And you could even double up and go with Urias if you really like him. And then one more guy that I wanted to mention, we talked about him last week, actually, since he'll probably be playing first base for the Rays, but Brad Miller. He is going with an ADP of 429 overall. I just think that, you know, it's sort of a Hail Mary. I think he can have a nice bounce back season. And you can go listen to last week's episode if you want to hear more on him. But that's going to wrap us up, gentlemen.
Yeah, and so, by the way, I had Brad Miller on my list, but I chose not to say anything because I didn't want to steal yet another player from you. So
you knew I'd have him.
You're welcome. Yeah, and he walked 15.5% of the time. That's crazy.
Yeah. So if nothing else, OBP leagues. There you go. Bob's your uncle. So thanks so much for joining us, Sammy. That's going to wrap us up. So before we get out of here, let everybody know where they can find you out in the world on social media, and go ahead and plug any upcoming work that you have coming out in the next coming days or weeks.
Yeah, for sure. You can find me on Twitter at SammyReedFI. My work is at rotogrinders.com and the Baseballholics Anonymous podcast. Did a chapter for Joe Pisapia's Fantasy Black Book, which is fantastic, and you guys should get it. And, dude, I'm a big fan of this show. I'm a subscriber. This was super fun. Really appreciate you guys having me on.
Awesome. It was really fun having you on. Hopefully you will come back and join us again. That's going to do it for this week. Next week we'll be moving on to the shortstop position, or as I like to call it, the belly button of the diamond. And until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.